You were hoping for like an epic natural start, and it didn't work out.
It didn't happen. Sorry. No, but that was it. You just did it. That was the epic natural start.
Yeah. Oh my god. And we're into it now.
We're on.
It's like what is it? The jump rope where you're like on the outside. You know, you're kind of nervous, and then you're in, and it's fun.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. You're like, do I jump? And now we're jumping.
Yeah.
We're jumping
for sure. Exciting.
Well, welcome to the Comedy Confession Booth, John Alice.
Thank you, Jamie.
Owner of the Comedy Clubhouse.
Yeah.
Every time someone says that, you get a little bashful.
I guess I'm kind of used to it now, but certainly, like, if someone's introducing me on stage as the owner, I don't really like that very much.
Oh, why not?
Because I worry that the audience thinks that I'm there because I'm the owner, that I've like bullied my way onto the stage or something like that. And I also don't like the idea of feeling like I'm, I don't know, like bragging about it or something like that. I get really like anxious about what the audience might think that I've told the host or the way I've exercised my power or something like that. So I don't know. I feel weird about it.
Sure.
I also want to start when I'm doing comedy. I want to start with like a kind of a blank slate. Right. So
yeah.
I don't want.
It's like when a host introduces you and they're like, they're super funny. You're going to love them. And it's like, but what if they don't?
Yeah, exactly. Or I might just want to lie. Sometimes I just want to lie about what I do. So I might want to be like, oh, I work as a tour guide, which I used to do.
Right.
Or, you know, I might just want to
pretend to be poor.
Yeah, well, I am still poor.
Yeah.
Don't worry about that.
Exactly. But you don't want the people of your business, like when you're on stage and you're talking about being poor and they're like, but I'm paying money to see you right now at your business.
Exactly. There's like it messes with sort of the congruence that I'm trying to create, something like that.
That's really interesting, though, because you do have this unique, you're in a unique position where you have to kind of figure out comedian John and comedy club owner John.
Yeah.
How are you dealing with that now?
I mean, as long as people don't know I'm the owner, I think it's fine. And I do for my shows, Show Up, Go Up, I have set like a standard where it's like I will say anything and I like to. I mean, I won't say anything. I'll say whatever I think is maybe somehow funny and I can squeeze something funny out of it.
You're going to say anything like Jordan Peterson? All right. Like,
try him. Not quite that extreme, but yeah, try and set a precedent for that. Yeah, I guess there's some worry that you might say something that people are like, oh, that's, you know, that reflects badly on the club or something like that. But I also kind of think, well, the whole reason that I'm here and I started this was that I would get to do it the way that I want. So
yeah.
What's the point?
Yeah.
Otherwise, like, what's the point in like not doing it the way I want in order to try and protect the thing that I created to do it the way that I want, if that makes sense.
Yes, it makes sense to me. I don't know if it'll make sense to anyone else.
All right. Sorry, audience.
But cool. That's fun. I think everyone has that struggle to a degree, right? Where not everyone, but especially when you're hosting a show, I think, because when you host, you want to maybe try something a little new or talk about whatever you want.
Yeah.
And then, but you're also like, but if the audience hates me, they're going to hate the whole show and it's my show. And
yeah, the hosting, I guess it is a bit like a hosting responsibility where you do kind of just have to be friendly and be nice.
Yeah.
And hopefully get everyone to like you. That's the kind of the main goal.
Yeah, yesterday I wanted to, like, because it's shitty mic, so I'm like, well, this is my chance to try shitty stuff. But I was, like, really nervous about it because I wanted to try a joke about how people on Instagram are like, a vote for Joe Biden is a vote for genocide. And, you know, I think a vote for Trump is a vote for worse genocide. So, anyway, I'm trying to.
And you just thought starting with genocide might not be.
I did it anyway.
Yeah? How'd it go?
Not great. Not great. But yeah, I mean, doing controversial jokes is always risky, no matter who you are.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But I think especially if you're you, it's riskier.
Yeah, and I've certainly shied away from it much more in recent years. But I don't, like, not really consciously, just I'm not writing that sort of thing, or it has to be like really, really good if I am going to do that and stuff like that.
Yeah. What are you writing lately?
Nothing.
Cool.
Nothing. I mean, I try and write every day. And sometimes I write a new joke. Sometimes. I was in Sweden the other week, and I did quite a lot of writing there. And I think when you're in a new environment, it always helps me a little bit.
Always.
But usually when I write in Barcelona, I just end up writing a big to-do list of all the things. Like, I'm like, all right, here I am in the morning, got my coffee. I'm like sitting with a view, and then I just write like, okay, make sure to update that thing on Eventbrite. And then I have like a big to-do list, and I go like, fuck, I better stop writing now. I gotta get cracking on the to-do list, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think about creativity a bit more broadly these days, so that I don't feel guilty about not writing stand up.
Right.
Because I say to myself, oh, but it's still creative to think of like a fun new concept for the bar and like promote that in an interesting way, or like the emails that I write, like that's all fun and creative and useful and for the clubhouse at the moment, you know?
Yeah. It's hard. I mean, it's hard when you're working in like the admin of comedy, right? And I face this too, where I write full time. Mm-hmm. So it's like, because I'm writing all day, I don't have time to write for myself, but I'm still writing. So I'm like, okay, it doesn't want to make me die, like my sales job, but it still is like creatively, I'm not fully fulfilled. Yeah. So I think that's a really healthy kind of perspective of like, but these things I'm doing are creative and they are fulfilling something.
Yeah, it helps me. It helps me to think about it like that. I don't know. I'm not sure if you had... Do you think you have much choice over the things that you think about?
No.
Yeah. I think you're stuck with it.
I think you're stuck with it. I mean, I think therapy like can help you reframe how you think about things, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Do you go to therapy?
I've gone to therapy. I'm not currently going
you're
to therapy.
You're solved.
Except this. This is the this is the nearest thing to therapy I've had in a while.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, we could get into some therapy stuff. So how's your relationship with your parents?
Oh, hey, Mom. She'll definitely watch this. She watches. I'm pretty sure she watches everything that I do, which is, yeah, it's very, very sweet.
My mom did. She hasn't told me if she's watched this.
Yeah.
But maybe she probably
maybe
does.
She did and hated it. She's like, I can't keep a straight face.
No. She's like, I'm not proud of my daughter anymore.
Yeah.
That's cute that your mom watches everything.
Yeah. Yeah. She's super supportive.
That's really nice. What about your dad?
Also very, very supportive.
All right. You're solved. You have no problems.
Well, I don't know. I'm not going to rat on my parents here. You're not gonna get nothing out of me, Jamie Lerner.
No, that's fair. It's a I don't normally ask guests what their relationship is like with their parents, in all fairness.
It's good. They're actually coming over to Europe a bit later on in the year. In I think July they're coming. We're maybe gonna go to Iceland together.
Oh my god. Cool.
I'm not sure.
See some northern lights. Is that in July?
I think it's like summer, so no.
Wait, northern lights are not in the summer.
Well, I think it's kind of like daytime all the time or something like that.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Maybe not. Maybe I have just no idea.
No, I think you're right. I'm an American. Geography's not my thing. If my dad listens to this, he will kill me for not knowing this, though.
Yeah, funny. I would love to see the northern lights. I'm a huge fan of like just like natural phenomena type stuff like that. So
it'd be really cool.
If I do get to see them, great.
We should do group trip to Iceland.
Yeah.
To see that we'll do a Northern Lights comedy show.
One day. I think I've been thinking about that. Like, it'd be sweet to hire a van and do a comedy road trip.
That would be cool. Comedy clubhouse on the road. And we bring them and just film everything.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. My parents, speaking of them, they just bought a camper van in New Zealand, like a big one, like a nice one. They slept, my brother's family and both my parents slept in it.
Holy
so
shit.
So that's like seven people or something. All sleep. I mean, they said it wasn't very comfortable, but
whatever.
We've right?
slept in very uncomfortable situations, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure. And so I'm like, now I'm thinking to go back to New Zealand, both to visit my family and also maybe while I'm there, borrow the camper van and do like a whole road trip around
the
country. Because they had there's a new comedy club that opened kind of recently, probably about when we opened, to be honest. And I don't know. It'd just be fun. I think it'd just be fun.
That is so cool. I would do that.
Yeah.
Come
along. Let's we'll wrangle up a few people and take New Zealand by storm.
Let's do it.
I thought it'd be really funny if we like so stupid, but if we like dug a hole in the green room for a couple of weeks, we were like, all right, we're digging to New Zealand. We're gonna like dig. We're gonna get there. We're gonna do a tour of New Zealand, and then when we get to New Zealand, we like dig a hole on the beach or something rather, yeah, and then we pretend to have just like crawled out.
Wait, we have to do that. Yeah, that is so cute, right? Funny. That would be so cute. I think more realistically, it would be very funny if we just like went into the Barcelona sewer system. We're just like, all right, pop going up into the shit. Like,
this is how it goes.
That would be amazing, though.
That'd be sick.
Yeah, I've never been to New Zealand or Australia. I've never been down under.
That's British, Jamie.
Down under.
Down under.
Down under.
Down under. That's better. That's down closer. Under. Yeah, down under.
When someone says the words, I can kind of repeat it. It's just hard.
Yeah. Yeah. They say that you need a phrase to get into it, right?
Yeah.
Maybe you said like, chuck another shrimp on the bar. It's so weird to do a New Zealand accent when I'm a New Zealander.
You don't have to do a New Zealand. You have a New Zealand accent.
Yeah.
I like your accent because it always sounds like you're asking a question.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you want to get into the linguistic specifics, that's called terminal rising tone.
Terminal rising tone?
TRT.
TRT.
They reckon it's a sign of national insecurity that we...
No, really?
We're never really that sure of ourselves. So, like, we're constantly looking for reassurance.
You're doing it on purpose now, but now it's really funny. Yeah. That's amazing. Like you and like, I mean, is Hannah Gadsby Australian or New Zealand?
She's Australian.
Yeah, but she does it too, I noticed.
She does it as well, yeah.
So it's basically like the UK dumped a bunch of prisoners and we're like, just do your thing. And all you guys like kind of have British accents, but just are really insecure about it.
Yeah, that's what happened with Australia. I don't know what happened. I don't know how it happened with New Zealand.
How did people end up on New Zealand that aren't native? I don't know anything about New Zealand history.
Mostly by boat.
Yeah.
So my grandparents came after World War II was a pretty common thing. They were involved in the war in different capacities. And
in what way?
My granddad on my dad's side, he was a prisoner of war. He was Dutch.
Oh, shit. Oh, shit.
And so he would have been like 15 or 16 and was locked up in prison camps and escaped, apparently. Escaped a couple of times.
It's badass.
He's a smooth talker, talked his way past the guards and managed to get out.
Wow.
Which is cool. And he was given the option of moving to New Zealand after the war, so he did. And then his wife, Hilda, my dad's mum, was like I think a physiotherapist or something like that, and was the same sort of thing. They got to move. Then my other grandparents moved later on. They were from England.
Oh, okay.
And they were trying to like have a picnic. They kept like every week, and they're like, this Sunday we're gonna have a picnic. Like, let's go have a picnic. And then it would rain, and they'd be like, oh no, picnic's cancelled, everybody, no picnic. So eventually they were like, fuck this, let's move to New Zealand.
They fled World War II because of the weather.
Yeah, well, this would have been, I guess, later on in the 1970s or something like that.
That's crazy.
1960s,
though.
I bet.
60s. That is funny, though. I was like, what way are they trying? Because, you know, a lot of people escaped because they were either Jewish or Nazis. So,
yeah, neither.
Yeah. But you're kind of the descendant of like a World War II survivor.
kind of. I wouldn't get into it like that, really.
No, that's kind of cool. That's awesome. And then you were like, fuck you guys, I'm going back to Europe.
Yeah, kind of.
What led you to move here?
I was just bored. Yeah, spirit of adventure. I wanted something different, something else. My life was kind of good, like, but like just good, like everything was good.
Yeah.
You know, and then after a while, it's like, oh, is it just going to be good like this, like forever? And so I wanted something else. I wanted...
I want adventure in the great white somewhere.
Yep, exactly. And yeah, in the end, it was kind of, I had an opportunity. I was working for my dad selling barcode numbers.
Nice. And very exciting.
super exciting. And he was expanding his business into like non-English speaking countries. So I already spoke Spanish. And I was like, oh, look, that's a good excuse. I could move to Spain and do that. And I still do.
Very cool.
Still sell barcodes.
Still selling barcodes.
Actually,
that's your real passion, right?
That's my real passion.
This is like you do the comedy club for work, but you're really passionate.
Yeah,
about
the comedy is how I make my money, obviously. And then the barcodes is just what I'm enthusiastic about.
Obviously. Yeah.
This coffee is actually from somebody we supply the barcodes for.
Wow. Sort of.
Yeah.
And we just got coffee at the Comedy Clubhouse.
Delicious coffee.
It is. It's actually really good. I'm not a big coffee drinker,
okay.
But I like it. Yeah.
You were. I almost bought a way more expensive machine because you were like, I don't like drip coffee.
Just for me.
Almost. Yeah.
Aww.
Now I find out you don't like any coffee really at all.
I'm
like,
not a huge
you don't even have a strong opinion on coffee.
No, I don't. Not really. I bought an espresso machine for my apartment.
Nice.
It's like €100. It's not like insane.
It's mostly like a practicality thing. Like.
Yeah.
Making lots of it quickly and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Like when you said, I was like, you know, that makes more sense. It's easier. Yeah. I just never really see drip coffee here. So it's American.
Yeah, it's weird. The machine was like the finest American coffee. I was like, that's weird. We haven't even put coffee in it.
Yeah, it's just because Americans don't drink espresso. I mean, like they do, but over here, like a cafe con leche is like espresso with milk, whereas like in the States, if you're like coffee with milk, it's like drip coffee with milk.
Yeah.
So
it's different. That's what we're going to do here. That's what we're going to lean into our American side, our foreign side.
Nice. I'm glad I have me and Hannah rubbing off on the club.
Yeah.
as Americans.
Big American influence.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Stand-up comedy is kind of an American thing.
It is, isn't it? How did you, okay, so let's talk about you as a comedian. How did you get into comedy?
I always liked it. I always liked watching it and things like that. And then...
Is there like, because I grew up watching like SNL and stuff. Did you have stuff like that in New Zealand?
Not really like that. There's one or two kind of New Zealand comedians that are known, but then like not really as I was growing up. It was kind of, they were more from like earlier days, like old school stuff. We used to have kind of like talk show type things. There was one Australian talk show called Rove that we'd watch with our family. Uh-huh. And when I was 16, we went to Edinburgh actually to the.
Whoa.
So we did a whole big family trip around Europe for 3.5 months. We were there was 8 of us in a van.
Holy
and
shit.
We were driving around everywhere. We'd get to a place, we'd all pile out of the van and then build a big tent and then all pile into the tent and then we'd do the same thing every morning and head to a different place.
That's so adventurous.
Yeah, it was a really cool opportunity.
Wow.
And while we were doing that, we spent a bit of time in Edinburgh during the Fringe Festival. So I saw a couple of comedy shows there.
Any that you remember?
Yeah, I remember there was a guy from Glasgow. Actually, I remember a couple of things from one show in particular that I saw. There was a guy from Glasgow that was just his whole thing, like every joke finished with, and then I stabbed him in the face.
That's the most Glasgow shit I've ever
yeah,
heard.
That was his whole thing. I'm from Glasgow. It's what we do. He's like, I can't help it. It's what we do. And then there was another joke from another guy that was really funny. Well, I thought it was funny at the time. No, it's still funny. Whatever.
The things that were funny when we were kids will never not be funny.
Yeah.
Because they've informed our sense of humor. Like, I'll watch Hannah Montana now and be like, this shit's still good. Like,
yeah.
Even though it's shit, like, it's still funny. Like, it, I don't know.
Yeah.
It holds up. Okay, so tell me about this. That is funny but not funny.
Well, the joke was he used to work as a like a sign holder, like a sandwich board guy. So he'd go and like wave around a sandwich board, 2 pizzas for £10 or whatever. And then one day he gets to work and they were like, oh, we don't need you anymore. We've realized there's this like lamppost that we can put posters on. So we're actually going to use this instead. Like, you're fired. He's like, ah, oh, now I get it. Those damn poles are stealing my job.
That's funny.
It's pretty funny, yeah.
I think that's pretty funny. That's pretty good.
So, yeah, I remember that. And then when I started doing it, I went to a stand-up comedy show. It was like a little taster. There was like 10 comedians. I think they were doing 5 minutes
each.
Where
did you start?
This was in New Zealand.
Cool.
It was like in New Zealand when I knew I was leaving already, and I was like, well, whatever, I can embarrass myself in front of everybody because I'm not going to be here anymore. So, yeah, I saw 10 comedians do it, and I didn't think they were very good. So I was like, I can do that. Now I realize, you know, it was probably a bunch of really good comedians that were just like, you know, fuck this, I just thought of this morning, whatever, I'm going to throw it out there.
Yeah.
I like, in my head, there was these 10 comedians that had really been working really, really hard, and they did this 5 minutes, and the 5 minutes wasn't very good.
Yeah.
But now that I've been doing it for a while, I realize probably they just...
Yeah, probably just trying new stuff.
Like, yeah, exactly.
They were miking. What's funny about that is there's been a pattern. I'm starting to mention this now. There's been a pattern of almost everybody I've talked to. And I'm like, why'd you start comedy? They're like, I went to an open mic and, I saw people do it. And I was like, I could do that. Like, everyone has had that same experience, which is kind of interesting that we all have this sort of shared.
Arrogance.
Yeah, you have to be a little arrogant.
Yeah.
Like, to think that you should talk on stage for an hour.
For sure.
For any time.
And it's like, to go and be like, this is terrible. This must be, I'm embarrassed for all of these people that I'm watching doing this embarrassing thing. Like, they're so terrible. And then going like, well, but if I did it, it wouldn't be embarrassing, you know? If I did it.
Right. Like, if I, you know, this is so bad for these people. But if it were me, I would be great at it. Like, I wouldn't be embarrassed at all, right? That is interesting. That's a... Do you ever get like, how do you feel when you perform? Like, do you ever feel like, sorry, I'm trying to think of the right phrase, because I'm like, sometimes I feel embarrassed when I perform, but for the most part, I love being on stage. But yeah, what's your relationship with performing?
I really enjoy the writing. I really enjoy having ideas and sort of going like, oh, I wonder if I can get this to work. I wonder if I'll figure out a way to say this.
The creativity of it.
Yeah. But I'm not like, I don't love the actual performance part of it. Sometimes if I like know a joke well and I'm like really in the moment, then I'm quite enjoying it, but it's not that common that I would feel like that.
Interesting.
And then depends on the show. Some shows I get really nervous. I get really nervous performing at Imperfecto.
Why?
Just, I don't know. There's always an audience. Andy always does a really good job hosting. I feel like everyone always does like quite well.
Yeah.
And I always want to like try something, and I never know if it, like, sometimes it goes really well, but sometimes it just doesn't.
Totally.
At all. So it's really like, I don't know.
I feel that with Imperfecto. Like, I feel when I perform at Imperfecto, like, I always, like, if I bomb, I feel really bad. I'm like, Andy trusted in me to do 5 minutes of something new, and I wanted to try it. Like, it doesn't bother me that much if I bomb, but Andy finds it funny. But if it's just bad, I'm just like, oh, I just wasted a spot. Like, I don't know. I feel bad about it.
Yeah.
But I always want to try new stuff there because I also know that, like, especially, like, Andy wants to encourage new material there.
Yeah.
So I'm like, it's a great mic to do, but it is, I understand that stress.
Yeah, yeah. I'll tell you what, I fucking hate the idea of bombing now more than ever. Like,
why?
Before I was, like, chilled about bombing because, like, it's part of the process and we're all just, like, trying and none of us know what we're doing or whatever, but now it's more like bombing in front of other comedians.
Yeah,
that, and it comes back to this like, oh, he's the owner thing or whatever, like people kind of know that about me, so I'm like, I don't want to go to Imperfecto and like bomb in front of like 10 people that know who I am and know that I do this but like maybe haven't seen me perform before or whatever, you know.
Yeah, because I feel like you don't perform as much as you maybe could.
Yeah, no, I don't. I mean, I'd always like to, but it's
hard. Like, sad, you know, like you have to be here a lot of the time and can't always perform on every show that's here.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to have Shop go up as like a minimum. So right. I'm like, every week, pretty much, I know that I'm going to be on stage for 20 minutes and I'll be able to try out whatever I want.
Yeah, that's how I feel. It's shitty.
And then it's like, I do a lot of hosting stuff.
Yeah, yeah, because you host the Spotlight, Friday Night Live yeah. a lot. And
So that's a little different.
Yeah.
I kind of, it's not the way to get really, really good at comedy, but it's just the way that I'm treating it now, which is like, as like a boxer prepares for fights or something like that. So like between fights, when he doesn't have any, when I don't have any big gigs coming up, I'm like, all right, well, I'll try and like eat healthy. Like I'll try and like perform and like still be used to being on stage and that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of be ready to start training should I have to start training. Right. And then, you know, like, so I had this gig in Sweden. I was like, oh, that's a big deal. I want that to go well. I have to do 20 minutes. It's a new country. There's a little bit of responsibility.
I'm sorry. That was a dad joke.
it's a country I've never performed in. And, like, no one else in Barcelona had performed in as yeah. well. So I felt a certain responsibility to basically represent
yeah.
the scene well. Because if two Barcelona comedians go to another scene and they freaking kill it,
it means a lot.
It means a lot. Yeah. That guy will book more comedians from Barcelona. He will be flying more people out, you know?
Exactly, so, which is awesome.
So that, I was like, all right, this is kind of an important gig. I do want to make sure that I do at least a few gigs in the couple of weeks leading up to it. So I did Imperfecto and I did Space Cowboy and all of that.
All that fun stuff.
And
yeah.
like the Tom Segura thing, I did like...
That was cool. How was that? How did it feel opening for Tom Segura? Like how because that's obviously so different from because it's a bigger space. It's
yeah, know. Super different. I mean, I was so nervous. Like at that stage when you actually do the gig, it's like I'm glad that I got through it. Like after doing the Barcelona gig and I did pretty well and people liked it.
Yeah.
Then for the Madrid gig, I had a good time. Because I was like, none of my friends are watching. No one I know is watching. I've already gotten through that and I already did quite well. So I already know I can do this exact thing.
Right.
And now I get to do it in Madrid in front of people that I don't know and just kind of enjoy myself.
Yeah. But here you're nervous, shaking in your boots.
Yeah, yeah. Well, especially because I'd done, so in the 2 weeks leading up to it, I did 15 gigs. So I did 2 gigs a day and on one of the days I did 3 gigs.
Shit.
So all of the material I had run so many times, like so much, and I wasn't, like the last few times I ran the material, I didn't do a very good job of it.
That's the worst though, because it's like, I feel like that happens a lot with material you've been doing for a while or when you're preparing for a gig or something, that by the end of you doing it, it just sort of loses its like shimmer.
Yeah.
And you don't like doing it anymore. And then you're like, okay, now I have to go do this material that hasn't worked the last few times.
For sure. But it is. I mean, the advantage of doing a gig like that is whatever, like 1,200 people. None of them have seen me before. Like maybe,
right.
maybe 15 people in the audience have seen me before. And the same with going to like Sweden or whatever. You get to tell, of all the jokes that you have, you get to pick any of them you want. And that's a lot. That's a lot of jokes yeah. to choose from, you know? So then it's just about kind of making the right decisions.
Yeah. What's your favorite joke that you tell?
My favorite joke that I tell? I tell one about circumcision that I think is quite fun.
Circumcised?
I'm uncircumcised.
Oh, shit.
That's what the joke's about. Yeah, yeah.
It's dirty dick?
this is my confession, my comedy confession. Yeah, dirty dick. That's exactly what the fucking joke is about. You goddamn Americans and your stigma about the us, the great uncircumcised.
Do you get smegma?
No! That's... no! We use soap.
See, Americans, we don't use soap.
Yeah. Yeah, like, you are the dirty ones.
We're the dirty ones.
anyway, so I quite like that joke because it is both a funny joke and it's like playing with words and things like that, but it's also kind of saying like, hey, it's a little unfair that Americans have been making fun of us for so long because they get their dicks chopped off as babies. Like that's the weird thing in that situation, you know? Like that's like how is it that it's been flipped so that the people that don't get genitally mutilated as babies are like the weird ones in this situation. So
yeah, we've normalized it, and it's. I mean, especially like as a Jewish person, I mean, it comes from Judaism.
Yeah,
because I think I don't.
You guys are responsible for a lot of stuff.
I think it's our fault. I think we should blame the Jews on this one.
Yeah. On the circumcision front.
Yeah, just on the circumcision. Nothing else, guys. Nothing else. But we can blame Jews for circumcision. I mean, I don't know exactly why America kind of adopted it from Judaism, or like why it got so widespread. I do know like a lot of doctors were Jewish and still are, and that's like a common trope.
Oh,
but
okay.
One of the reasons for that is because being a doctor wasn't seen as like a high position or a position of power, right? Like,
yeah, until you guys started doing it.
Hey,
you made it work.
I mean, Jews started Hollywood because they couldn't work in any other industry, and now people are mad that they're Jews. Like, I don't know.
You gotta stop being successful.
I'm sorry, we're just too good at stuff, okay? No, we've just had to be resourceful because we've been kicked out of every single place we've ever lived.
I think they should start letting you guys play basketball.
I agree. Adam Sandler does it.
Yeah.
He plays basketball in every movie.
I guess I've seen him play basketball before, yeah.
Every movie he plays basketball. That's like a thing. He plays basketball and he wears an NYU shirt, which is also where I went to college.
You're a big Adam Sandler fan?
I am, actually. Yeah, he's my guy. He's like, as far as like Judaism and comedy and like New York and everything, he's just like, he's our guy, you know? Yeah. But my physics teacher's wife dated Adam Sandler. So my physics teacher hated Adam Sandler.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
Yeah, it was
Wait, funny. So his wife dated Adam Sandler, so he hated Adam Sandler because she's like...
Because that's his wife's ex.
Yeah.
And like he's, you know, Adam Sandler and like successful and apparently very nice. Every fan interaction I've read about, he's been very kind.
Yeah, tough shoes to fill.
Yeah. But, I mean, she chose him, so... And my physics teacher was great.
Do you think that's what happened? Or do you think Adam Sandler chose someone else? I mean, kind of feels like that might be what happened, right?
I don't know. Mr. Lillis didn't go into details, but I don't know. Mr. Lillis had a... I loved Mr. Lillis. He was, like, really fun. Did you ever have any, like, really fun teachers?
I had some cool teachers. I don't know. Tell me how you mean really fun.
So he was fun because we had him for the last two periods of the day, and it was like AP physics. So we're all like, especially in the last few months of the year, we're seniors. We're just like, we don't give a shit. Right. But I would like come in from gym class, be like, Mr. Lillis, I was at rehearsal last night. I'm really tired. Can I just like nap under the lab table? And he was like, yeah, okay. As long as you get good grades.
Nice. That's pretty good.
So he was chill. I was in the National Honor Society in high school. I was a big old nerd. And, I was the vice president, and he had to like make a speech and like present me with a thing. Each student was assigned like a teacher or leader to like make a speech about them. And mm-hmm. he said, pressure builds diamonds. And Jamie is a diamond. And it was really nice.
Yeah, that was cute.
Yeah, it was cute. It was cute. Yeah, I love Mr. Lillis. And we played a prank on him.
Yeah. Well, how did you prank him?
I know you love pranks. So we, it was April Fool's Day.
Nice.
I think kids pranking teachers is the best. I think kids should always prank their teachers. I think most teachers have a sense of humor and will enjoy it. Like, as long as it's not, like, mean-spirited.
Yeah, for sure.
I think. And I hope that we have some pranks on April Fool's Day.
Yeah, I have been thinking about that a little bit. Got any ideas for a good prank?
Oh, my God. Well, I'll tell you this one, and we can brainstorm. So what we did, because I feel like it was my idea. I don't know, but maybe it wasn't. It was, like, so we were, like, let's have someone ask to go to the bathroom. And then when he stands up to go to the bathroom, let's all just stand up and start walking to the bathroom. It was so funny. Like, so this kid, Ben, just was like, hey, Mr. Lillis, can I go to the bathroom? And Mr. Lillis is like, yeah, sure. Like, he's chill. So he stands up. And then all of a sudden, we just all get up and we just start walking. And Mr. Lillis is like, wait, what's happening? What are you guys doing? What's going on? And we like made it all the way to the bathroom.
Nice. Did one of you break at some stage? Or was one of you like, I don't know, just pranking you.
Yeah, like we were. I mean, he kind of figured out that it was just, I mean, it was April Fool's Day. So he was like, what are you guys doing? And we're like, we all have to go to the bathroom. Like, and then we all just were kind of like, haha, happy April Fool's Day. It was harmless.
That's pretty good. Yeah, that's a pretty good one. Pretty good. I imagine most teachers would be down for that sort of thing.
Yeah. So if you're a teenager and you're listening to this, which you shouldn't be, what teenagers would
this
be listening
to
this?
Not for you. Maybe, no, I don't know. I don't know any teenagers. Maybe Hudson, who does the social media for us. There's a slight chance that he would listen to it.
Okay, Hudson, Harris's son.
Yeah.
Play this prank on your teachers.
I had a teacher that used to play pranks on us.
Yes. Also, teachers prank your students.
Pretty,
that's the best.
Pretty good. In Bolivia, it was me. There was two exchange students in my class. It was me and this guy, Chaz.
Chaz
Manfalca. Was his actual name.
Stop. Where is he from?
He was from Pennsylvania.
That's such a Pennsylvania name.
Yeah, yeah. He was a
like
cool guy.
The like west of Pennsylvania, like the farmland, like not Philadelphia.
Yeah, I don't think he was from the city. I think he was from some small place.
Yeah, some like bumblefuck Pennsylvania.
But we would just like sit in the back of class. We didn't really know what was going on. And they were all trying to like pass their like final high school exams or whatever. So they're trying to do like physics and shit like that, and we didn't really speak Spanish, so we were just chilling in the back playing chess and things like that, and he would fall asleep in class and when he'd fall asleep, the teacher would get everyone to stand up and sneak outside of the room, like take all their stuff with them and then he'd like walk into the room and be like, Chaz, why are you still here? Everyone's gone home. And Chaz would like wake up and like pack his stuff and run out, and then everyone would be waiting just outside the door and we'd start laughing at him. So, yeah,
that's a really good prank. That's
pretty fun prank.
That's pretty fun. Yeah, we should definitely do some pranking on April Fool's Day.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of anything pranky. I thought it'd be funny to release like a special offer or a special ad or something like that, and then spend the weeks afterwards complaining about how everyone, like it was such an unrealistically good offer that everyone thought it was an April Fool's joke.
No one took
the offer or something like that.
That's fun. I don't know. We could do like, I don't know. I can't. I have no good ideas right now.
I don't have a good head for pranks.
No. The only like, I used to, whenever I'm like dating someone on April Fool's, you just go like, I'm pregnant. And then they're like, you're pranking me. And then I'm like, no, I'm serious. And then I break. I can't.
Fun little joke there, Jamie. That's a fun little...
I was thinking of pranking one of my exes this year and being like, hey, so remember how I didn't see you that entire month? I actually went back to the States and you have a son.
And actually you owe me back pay for child support. It's a lot.
It's a lot. We'll see if he's listening.
Funny. I do want to do this show in the cheap seats or the splash zone or whatever, where people pay way less. I think you could do like €1 tickets for the first two rows and then like €20 for the other rows or something like that. And then like the people that bought the fancy tickets, you just go way over the top. You do like silver platters and you do like table service and all that.
Oh
and
my
then
God.
The people that pay the €1 tickets, you just treat them like shit all night. Like, you ignore them. The other people cut to the front of the queue. Like, they have to pay extra for drinks. You don't smile at them. Like, nothing. They get the full, like...
Wait, I actually love that idea. Yeah,
the
wait.
Full peasant treatment, you know?
Yeah, it's like the penny... Oh my God, it's Shakespeare. You know
Yeah, you can go to the Globe Theatre for a pound or whatever, right?
Yeah, it used to be a penny.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a penny back in the olden days.
Like in Shakespeare's time.
Yeah, literally.
But these days, that's a lot more, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's probably about a pound.
I think today, I don't know, but they are the best place to watch because you're close to the action, but you have to stand for the entire Shakespeare play, which is not a short amount of time.
It's a long time, yeah. It's not even in English as well.
What?
So it's not even in English, not in English. I did that.
You did that?
Yeah, yeah, I did
What'd you see?
A Globe Theatre. I saw maybe Much Ado About Nothing.
Oh,
I'd have to ask my mum. Maybe she can correct me
Mommy,
when she sees this.
Mommy Alice.
This was on the
Europe trip. Did I meet your parents?
You probably did.
I think I did. I think they came through.
They came. They went to Midweek Crisis. I often recommend Midweek Crisis to people visiting.
Yeah.
And
You mean you don't recommend shitty mics?
I don't recommend shitty mics. Sorry, Jamie. They went to Midweek Crisis, and then my mum got picked on by, not picked on, but Mariah was talking with her, and my mum did a bit of a prank
where
she started, she was like, I'm from New Zealand. Mariah's like, you got any problems? And my mum's like, yeah, my son moved to Spain and he won't come home or whatever. And Mariah, like, which just like kept asking her questions, like, wow, this son of yours has got a lot in common with John. And then it was like, oh, it is John.
It is John.
My mum was, I think, very, very happy with the situation.
That's cute. So back to you. Why did you decide to open a comedy club?
It's something that people had been talking about. Me and Matt and I mean all sorts of different people for years, with like Vinnie Valentine was talking about starting a comedy club, which was really hoping that would happen. In fact, when I first started my comedy show at La Dorotea, I even introduced Vinnie to the guy that was running the Dorotea, kind of in the hopes that they would start a comedy club.
Yeah.
So in the end, it wasn't something like I didn't go out going like, okay, I'm going to start a comedy club. This is how it's going to be. It was more like an opportunity came along. Slightly sad opportunity, actually, because it was one of our favorite bars to do comedy, Limerick, which had a couple of different shows on a Friday and on a Tuesday, I think. Ended up shutting down because of COVID. Yeah, it was pretty rough as well, because it's like he'd been there for ages and ages, rougher, and they didn't give him any kind of break on the rent or anything like that. And so then he ended up shutting down. So Matt suggested that we talk to the owner and try and negotiate something.
Yeah.
We were able to negotiate a 6-month contract, really quite a good contract, I think. But it was like crazy COVID conditions. It was like we had to close at 5 p.m. There was 30% capacity was allowed, so we could only have like 20 people in the place. So it was really like a good test to see if people were into it, because it wouldn't have, like, without a hell of a lot of enthusiasm, it wouldn't have worked at all, you know?
Yeah. Like, it's kind of crazy that you guys started it in COVID. And I guess that makes sense because – yeah, I was like watching everything from back in New York because I've been around and like knew people from the scene. I didn't know you. And I was like, who is this guy starting a comedy club? Like
this bastard.
This guy. This little beanie hat, which you never wear anymore.
Well, I do sometimes, but yeah, not as often.
Why not?
I'm trying the long hair thing.
How do you like it?
It's pretty annoying.
Yeah.
It's mostly annoying, I would say.
It's mostly annoying. It looks great, though. You pull it off.
Thank you. Thank you.
He's looking at himself in the screen.
I've been trying, like, tying it up and stuff like that, but we'll see. We'll see how long I last. Yeah. And when winter rolls around, I'm sure I'll be in the beanie a lot more often as well.
It's winter now.
Next time it rolls around. Next time
Fair
winter
enough.
Rolls around.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So it was cool. It was cool that people liked it and people came and
yeah.
Glad, very happy.
No, it's great. And now it's grown into this and you see it growing more.
Yeah, I think we got an initial extra surge of enthusiasm from people that was just quite lucky because there was nothing to do. Everyone was like just really, really hungry to socialize at that stage.
Yeah.
So really like people just wanted to be with other people, be back in pubs. So it was like very, very exciting for people to have something like comedy to go to. Mm-hmm. So we were lucky in that regard. Lucky to have the place. You know, we had like inspections from the police and stuff like that. So lucky like not to get fined. Yeah. Lucky that people like Louis CK and Michelle Wolf come by, and Michelle comes often and likes doing shows. So there's been like probably 20 things that you're like, oh, that, like, really glad that happened, and like it's made everything work and made everything easier.
Yeah, it just kind of things started clicking.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Michelle is really involved now too, which is cool.
Yeah,
love it. Cool. I guess we're nearing the end of our time.
I feel like I'm not in it.
I'm like, can I tell you to move? I've been reclining too much.
Yeah, yeah.
You're too relaxed.
No, you're the boss. You're the boss, Jamie. You tell me what you want. I'm the boss right now.
I love it. Yeah, I love having power and authority over.
Uh-oh.
Get down. I'm kidding. No, not that much. Sometimes I get really uncomfortable with power because it's rare that people give it to me, I think.
Why is that? Why don't people trust you with power?
I think because I'm a short lady.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think people take me less seriously. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just always going to be a thing. I think that's going to be forever in my life.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's been like studies on it because I kind of looked into it. I was like, because I'm, you know, like women as a whole obviously are given fewer opportunities. And you could argue that now with diversity quotas, et cetera, that's not true, but it still is kind of true.
I think short guys probably have it worse on balance.
Yeah. I mean, that's why there's so many short guy actors, right? Because they've done studies on that, which is that you have a complex of like, I need to be seen because mm-hmm. no one sees me. No one takes me seriously. And so then you go in front of the camera. Finally, you're seen and millions of people love you. And I think that's the case. But I think women as a whole are taken less seriously. And then I think unless you're like, putting on a power suit every fucking day as a short woman, like people are just like, oh, you're a baby, like you're little, like you could be 12, and it's like, yeah, I could be, but I'm 30, so I don't know, but maybe that's the case with New Zealanders since you guys are so insecure and you're talking.
I'm just like, you tell me, what do you want? I'll believe you.
No, I think you're great at what you do.
Cool.
But
and also I gave you power.
You gave me power and I do really appreciate
it. And she's a woman.
You don't normally give women. No, I think honestly, John, I think one of the best decisions you've made is surrounding yourself with smart women. Not myself. I'm talking about Hannah Becker and Deanna and Femme. And Mila, like just women who run shit.
Yeah, totally.
And, you know, obviously you brought James on board too, but for the most part.
James is really good value too. really good value. I think especially with, you know, how everything's broken down over the last few months or whatever, that's been, hopefully, touch wood, one of the cleverest things I've done is have, you guys around more and having more input and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it's becoming a place where people really want to be, and not just. I think there was a, I don't know. It's very easy for comedy to draw in a lot of creepy dudes, so it's great that it hasn't done that too much.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it has a little bit.
Yeah, but it's gonna happen. You know, it's comedy. That's where like outcasts go to comedy.
Yeah, I guess I hope that if you have like a core of really good people, like one thing I was thinking is that you can't build like a strong community on rotten pillars, basically. So you have to make sure that the people that are right at the center at least agree on certain value things and stuff. And
yeah.
I think from there you can build out, and it might be slow, but it's and you might have to strip stuff back as well to get there, but I think it's worth it long term.
I always love your metaphors.
Yeah?
Yeah, you make a lot of metaphors.
Like Jesus.
All right, don't go too far. We've gone far enough. I'm done complimenting you. We don't need to give this guy a messiah complex. Is that why you're growing your hair out?
Yeah.
So who, I just to get a sense of like your comedic stylings, and there's a couple things I like asking every episode. Who are like your comedic inspirations? And this could be, or who do you love comedically? This could be local people or traveling people or famous people or whatever.
Yeah. So like watching Louis growing up, he was one of my favorites. Everything he's done. Not 100% really of everything he's done.
I love everything.
But he is, he's a phenomenal comedian. I really love how hard he works as well. That you know, obviously there was all the stuff that went down, but he kind of jumped back on and was like touring. He's working stuff out, and he's like, I don't know.
Sure.
I like that. I will personally.
I'll say the one thing I don't like is him calling it like, or like people calling it a comeback. Like, it's not like a comeback. It's like you fucked up and now like you're just slowly returning to come. It's not like, oh, let's celebrate his comeback. You know, it's just kind of like he already had enough come. You know, it's like stupid. I just all thought right. of that.
Good joke, Jamie.
No, that was stupid.
Anyway, like comedically for sure him. Anthony Jeselnik, I really like. He seems. I like his joke. I like that with him. I like that it's not really attached to his performance.
Right.
It's basically just his writing that is the reason that he's famous.
Yeah.
Or at least he doesn't seem to have a huge range as a performer. So he's just like, this is how I am, and I tell jokes, and they're really, really well written jokes.
Yeah.
James Acaster is great. Ed Byrne. When I was growing up, my brother would watch a lot of his specials, my older brother Joe, and I would love those as well. He's not so relevant these days, probably.
Yeah, I've heard of him though.
Yeah, he's an Irish guy. He's really, really great.
Yeah, Irish. I mean, Irish comedians are just like another level.
Yeah, and then local comedians. Big fan of Stefan from Romania. He cracks me up. He's so funny.
That's fun. What a fun little shout out. He's like not here right now though.
No, he had to go back to Romania. Unfortunately.
Why? They're part of the EU.
I don't know. I think for work. I think he had a shitty job here and so he had to go back.
Yeah.
And obviously there's a million other local comedians that are very, very talented as well. But
yeah.
I don't pick and choose. Hannah picks and chooses. That's her job, and I'm glad. I'm glad that I don't have to do it. I'm glad that that's not my job.
Yeah. No, same. I do not envy Hannah having to set those lineups and book shows and tell people who can and cannot do their hours and all of that. That does not sound fun to me. So props to Hannah.
And I get to, maybe I shouldn't say this, but I get to do a bit more of the anonymous side of things where Hannah's like, what about this person? I'm like, nah, probably.
Who's your biggest reject? No, I'm kidding. Who do you hate now?
Who would you never book? No, and it's not. And when people ask me booking questions as well, it's quite nice to be able to say like, nah, not my. That's actually not my job at all. That's you got to talk to Hannah about that one.
Yeah, no, Hannah does take on a lot of that dirty
work.
So
that's good, and really good booking. Like recently, there's just been a bunch of shows that you're like, great. Like these Vidura shows were awesome.
Awesome, and cool. We have another one.
This Saturday, mm-hmm. And he's also headlining the Spotlight. If you're interested, come to that. It's for sure going to sell out. Yeah. And then there's like this guy Luke Kidgel's coming in August.
Yeah, he's kind of a big deal.
He's a big deal.
On
yeah,
socials. Yeah.
So he's doing three shows, and like he's already started selling tickets for them.
So cool.
So it's really like, yeah. Thanks to Hannah, we do seem to be connected with a lot of the big names in comedy.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I like when they come through and they're like, I'm gonna do the Clubhouse. Like that's cool.
It's really nice.
Yeah. And the big guys that came recently, like Brad Morris and Tim Meadows.
Yeah, yeah. Also really cool.
Really cool. And they said that they love the vibe of like the place. So that's nice.
Yeah, I mean you talked to Brad about it, right? But yeah. It was and they said a few times while they were here that it reminded them of the early days in Chicago.
Yeah, which is cool because I would say the Chicago scene is like very community based, very a big sect of like alt comedy.
Yeah, freedom to fail is a really big thing that we should try and make sure that we conserve.
Freedom to fail.
Freedom to bomb. I think like I sort of worry about how other scenes fuck up sometimes, and I think that that's one is like. Obviously, I'm not saying that we're better than London or something, but I think that in scenes like that, we have a whole bunch of people that are trying to make it, and there's only like a very limited amount of paid spots and things like that. People might fall into a bit of a trap that's like, only do your best 5 minutes or your best 10 minutes all the time. And you people talk about adding another 10 seconds to their set or adding another 20 seconds to their set. It's like, I don't think that that's...
Yeah.
A healthy, natural way to develop comedy. You know, you have to have a lot of sets where you're like, I'm not doing any of that stuff that I know works. I'm going to do this stuff instead. Or
yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so trying not to be that. And then trying not to be like, exclusively booking friends would be a bit of a bit of a risk. But it's also like you trust your friends. So it's like it is the easiest booking option for us is to like book a comedian that we know really well who's based in Barcelona. It's like low risk. We know that they're going to kill it. And we also happen to be friends with them.
Yeah. And we like giving friends opportunities.
Right. But then it's like the danger is if you do that too much, then you just like kind of lock off the ways for other people to access.
Yeah. I think our scene is really lucky because it's growing. There's a lot of new comics coming up.
Yeah.
And there's also, there's enough solid people in our scene that most of us are friends. Like we're all friends with each other to a degree.
Yeah.
So we're always kind of booking our friends, but we're also booking new people and we're also booking visiting. We always book visiting comics. Like we are so probably the most welcoming scene to visiting comics.
Yeah, it was really nice. I saw a post from Teddy.
Yeah.
On Instagram today. Just talking about the Barcelona scene and how much he enjoyed his time here and that kind of thing.
So yeah.
It's always good to see that.
It was nice. It was really nice. Teddy's great. I love Teddy.
Yeah, I liked him.
I like it. He's a good dude.
I liked him. I sound surprised. No, I liked him.
What if we were just like, oh, Teddy, that piece of shit. Get out of here. We don't want you again.
He's exactly the kind of person that we should be trying to sort of connect with as well. Because he's in Switzerland running shows in Switzerland.
Yeah.
And same with this guy in Sweden where it's like he's the kind of guy we want to be flying out here because he's flying people there. You
right.
know?
So exactly.
It's so, just easier to lay a base with people like that.
Totally. And then we can start connecting everything and make a map and a network of – and then everyone has an orgy.
The European comedy orgy.
Nice. My dream. Oh, my God. As a chuckle fucker.
Yeah, is that a proud label you put on yourself?
Yeah, as a proud chuckle fucker. No, I think I've only fucked like 5 comedians probably.
No, that's not that many.
No, it's not that many. I don't know. I'd have to look at my list. But let's close it out with what would your advice be to new and young comedians besides don't fuck Jamie?
Advice to new comedians, just do it. Just do all the shows all the time, right? Like sometimes people ask me, they're like, how can I get on these bigger shows or something like that? And it's like, well, I have a show every week that you can just come to and you can perform on. And it's not at a convenient time. It's at 5 p.m. on a Saturday.
Yeah.
But every week, if you're there, you can perform. You know, and Hannah has a show on Mondays. You have a show as well. So it's like there's taking every opportunity to be on stage is the best way to be seen. Instead of trying to like network and stuff, just do it.
Yeah.
Just do it and do well. And we talk about you behind your back. So if you're killing, like, don't worry about it. We'll find out and we'll book you on the bigger shows and stuff.
Yeah. Like I'm sure like newer comics, you've probably seen like some other newer comics starting to get on, you know, shows like Mint and shows like the Friday Night Live and stuff like that.
Yep.
And that's because the showrunners, maybe even if we haven't seen you personally, someone else has seen you and they're like, this person is doing really well lately. And
For sure.
We take note. We also don't talk shit about people typically.
Yeah. But also.
We only talk nice things behind your back.
also, don't do a solo. It's too soon for a solo.
Yeah. I agree. I think especially like if you've been doing comedy for as long as like you and I have, and I mean, we're just now kind of in the last year or two, like starting solo and half hour, split hour stuff. I think there is kind of this idea of like when you've been workshopping jokes for so long, then you're finally ready. And maybe that's an old school mentality because of the way, you know, social media is kind of helping new comedians rise quickly because they're figuring out algorithms and reels and all that. But I agree. I think if you force yourself into a solo or a half hour too soon, even if it's funny, it's like...
Yeah, I don't know. Like maybe if you have a really compelling like life story that you want to tell, like I can maybe see it. I didn't actually like, see Michelle's solo,
was
but
great.
I believe like she has quite a in-depth story to tell. So I kind of get it in that sort of a situation.
Yeah, Michelle's was great. I'll say I cried during Michelle's because it's like it was really great. Like there were jokes and it was funny, but like the heart of it is kind of what carried the show.
Yeah,
and I would say like unless you have something where there's a heart that can carry it, it's tough. It's not easy. It's
I,
not easy. and forcing yourself to do that is like, just keep doing spots. Do 5 minutes, do 10 minutes, do 20 minutes, do 30, you know, just keep going up in time and seeing how long can you hold an audience's attention.
Yeah. I mean, an hour is a crazy long amount of time. I don't want to look at anyone for an hour, you know?
Yeah, I honestly, like, I hate watching specials, like, for the most part, unless I'm, like, high and eating ice cream.
Yeah.
And playing games on my phone.
I would also say, on the same note, I would also say don't go pro too quick. I think that sometimes people with comedy, they do it a bit, and they're like, I really, really love this. It's almost like an addict mentality.
It is.
You're like, I did it once, and I loved it, so now I'm going to do it all the time.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to make a living in Barcelona as a comedian. You, like, can't.
Yeah, there's basically no one who's making a living off being a comedian here.
And then even if you're really talented, there's only so many, there's only so much that you can get booked.
Yeah.
And I think having that pressure on yourself to have to sell tickets and have to sell shows and have to be on tour and all of this just takes away from some of the charm.
Yeah.
You know, I think find yourself a shitty job that you hate that pays well. This is my advice.
This is advice from John.
How to follow your dreams. That pays well, that you work 20 hours a week or something like that.
Yeah.
It's not like too stressful. And then you go out in the evenings and you have a great time.
Yeah. Just like learn to love it. Learn to like really fall in love with the craft of it. Not just the being on stage part, but the writing and the everything else that comes along with it.
Exactly.
And get really good at it. And then, yeah. That's great advice, John. I like that advice. You thumbs up for all the listeners. I don't know if we have more watchers or listeners. The Always Sunny podcast calls them creeps. So the watchers.
The watchers?
The watchers are the creeps.
Oh, yeah.
They're watching. Anyway, this has been our longest podcast yet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How long have we gone?
Over an hour.
Jeez.
Oopsies. An hour and 3 minutes.
I didn't think I had anything to say.
And look at that. You had so much. I bring it out.
Yeah, like, good.
Just pulling the words. No, you were amazing. You're an amazing guest. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Jamie.
Always. And anything that you want to promote this week? This episode will go out Wednesday the 13th.
You all just missed out on Topic Thunder. It's such a fun show. I love doing Topic Thunder when I get a chance. It's a lot of preparation, but it's cool. You're going to do it tonight. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I'm going to be Hanukkah Harriet.
Nice.
Basically my grandmother.
Nice. It'll be cool.
Yeah, that's going to be really fun. Anything else this weekend? We had the Spotlight, Friday Night Live. We got...
Michelle's doing a solo, 6:30 on Friday. Vidura's doing a solo. And then we have a barbecue on Sunday. A calzotaba.
Yeah.
You're not invited.
That's just for us.
But that's another cool thing that happens outside of your view is that all the comedians get together once a year or something and have fancy barbecues and things like that.
Yeah, so. We do stuff. We like each other.
Yeah.
Anyway, on that note, thank you so much. And see you next time.
Yay.
Woohoo.
Nice.